You know, I just hang out with Lori Brown too much, so I'm running a little behind. But I really, it's so easy to jump over Deborah 5, or Judges chapter 5, because most of that is in Judges 4. It's a poetic description, but it also is a song of thanks. And so the reason we can't skip it is, as Bill has kind of pointed out in his June 26th sermon, that when you look at Psalms 107 there, that part of that is man called to thank God. And that when we look at the book of Judges, and we look at the cycle there of sin, servitude, supplication, salvation, rest, we look at that cycle, we don't really see a thanks to God, right? Well, Deborah is the exception. This is, we have a whole chapter here being given to thanking the Lord. So we need to spend a little bit of time. I am going to rush through it a little more than I should, but like I say, we need to spend some time on it. So, did having it kind of parallel like that help y'all? Kind of when you read through it, make a little more sense or get a little more sense of it. And you know, it's sort of like we look at it and say, oh, the poem's poetic. Oh. But on the other hand, when you start looking at it, it really just gives us a lot of extra details, doesn't it? We get a lot more information out of this poetic. And then we won't, again, you know, the critics say, oh, it has to be written separate times. But you know, when we write poems, a lot of times it's not unusual to write them in an older or more formal fashion, right? I mean, Shakespeare, the guy's been dead for hundreds of years, but there are people who go around quoting him, right? And even writing poems in that style. So the fact that it's an older kind of form in some language is really what you would expect from a poem. So, first of all, what we have here is, you know, what's kind of interesting, and you know, the kind of the question is, you know, what about the leaders? Well, the leaders led. You know, when you know these people go off on the deep end, right? All that sin. What's the big problem? They're not obeying the Lord. Who are some of the people who are supposed to be saying, guys, listen? And, I mean, it's the leaders, right? Be they the more civil leaders, be they the tribal leaders, be they the Levites. But what's kind of said here, Deborah says, okay, the leaders did their job, but what good is a leader if the people don't follow a leader? So here in that line it says, and the people offered themselves willingly. So you have the leaders doing what they're supposed to do, and you have the people doing what they're supposed to do. And so here, just kind of these verses 2 through 5. I mean, it's just, it's giving thanks there, isn't she? She's praising God. Hear, O kings, give ear, O princes, to the Lord I will sing. I will make medley to the Lord, the God of Israel. And then, Lord, when you went out from Seir, when you marched from the region of Edom, the earth trembled and the heavens dropped. Yes, the clouds dropped water, the mountains quaked before the Lord, even Sinai before the Lord, the God of Israel. So when you think of those kind of geographical locations, Edom, Seir, which is kind of in Edom, and especially Sinai, what kind of comes to your mind? What a biblical event, one of our major 12 periods there.
When the children of Israel gathered around the mountain to hear God's.
All right, right. Exodus, right? So they come in from Sinai, they come up through Edom, they kind of go through Edom and come back around that back side there. So it's sort of, she's evoking, listen, we saw God's power in the days of Exodus. So it's kind of that geographical. James, you look like you have a thought.
Well, I was just thinking how she's recounting history.
Yeah.
Over and over, when you look at Judges, it's like,
there's people that didn't know the works of the Lord. And it's almost like reminding them, hey, this is it. Now, you may have forgot because this generation here, but, you know, this is what the Lord did. And helping them to go, to remember this is the Lord that you should be serving and what he's done in the past.
Right.
And what you have here is kind of a split. Is, you know, I kind of said, you know, where do we see in Judges the law being taught? And, you know, I kind of challenged y'all. Well, I still haven't had a chance to get up the spreadsheet, but that whole statement is totally bogus. I think we kind of said that we're on that path, and I just haven't kind of gone through the steps. But, I mean, just here, you know, Deborah, of course, she was a judge. So she was knowing. What was she doing? She was teaching the people. And Marty pointed out Gideon. We'll hopefully get to that part. And Gideon takes kind of a whole flip, you know, says, where are you, Lord? You know, where are all the things I've heard about you? I don't see that, Lord. So there's some education going on. So if the people are being taught what the Lord has done for them, and also that kind of implies some of the law, and the people are disobeying, it's sort of like, you know, do they think they're disobeying the Lord? I mean, that is kind of part of the problem, right? Because they worship the Lord, they worship Baal, they worship Asherah. They're like the nations round about them, and Jehovah is just one of their personal gods, or one of the gods of Israel, but then they worship all these other gods. So that's the really big problem, is in separating all that stuff out and worshiping just Jehovah. Okay, we're really doomed at this point. Alright. So, and then we're given a lot more on the oppression, right? We're just told that the people were oppressed. Do you need a notebook?
I have.
Okay, that's all right. I have work to get notebooks. I want everybody to have a notebook. All right. So, you know, it's just said that Sisera and Jabin oppressed the people cruelly. Okay? We come to chapter 5, and what do we get? That, you know, and we get a little bit here, this is our second verse. We said Shamgar is our one-verse judge, right? But actually, he's kind of our two-verse judge, because Deborah fills in the verse for us. So that in the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, the days of Jael, the highways are abandoned. Travelers keep off the byways. The robbers are so bad, you don't go on the roads. So, I mean, Bill, I don't know the parts of Mexico that you were in, but there are some lawless parts. Did you have any of the roads you traveled that you said, given the warning, be careful, this is a dangerous road?
That was Mexico City.
Mexico City, right? So you just, let's go around Mexico City. It's one big crime pit. Okay, so here, in these days with the Midianites, the people stay off the roads. Okay? The villagers ceased in Israel. They ceased until I arose. In other words, abandoned villages. The people would just up and leave their village because the Midianites were just coming through. Oh, actually, sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. Oh, yeah. Getting ahead. I mean, they would come, and Jabin, Hazor, they would just come. They would destroy the cities. They would take stuff. Okay. So then, we have Deborah, it just says, you know, now Deborah, judging Israel, you know, that, you know, she kind of just started. So here, in chapter 5, it says, I, Deborah, arose as mother in Israel, when new gods were chosen, then war was in the gates, with shields or spears to be seen. So new gods, it's a little gene there, so it's those idols. So they're going after idolatry. People say, hey, we're going to have new idols and stuff. War in the gates. The city's coming to that. And then here, there's no shields. There's no spears. They have no weapons. So when these people are called together, there's no weapons for them. And so, you know, it's part of the power of when you're kind of doing this poetic stuff. That, you know, in a prose, you just don't kind of roll that. Oh, and no one had, you know, shields or spears. But here, this is a song, and Deborah's trying to convey that thanks to the Lord. Says, Lord, the people, we had no shields, we had no spears. I mean, that's the most basic of weapons. And they had none. And so, and then the commanders offered themselves willingly. And so here's just all the society. And she, rather than saying everybody joined, she said, those that rode on white donkeys, not just the regular kind of gray donkeys, but white donkeys. The rich, those that are on rich carpets, and those who walk, by the way, just, you know, just walking, kind of an indication of the lowest, from the richest to the lowest. And then here we have, you know, verse 11, the people, she's telling people, you know, spread this. To the sound of the musicians at the watering holes, they that repeat the righteous triumphs of the Lord and the righteous triumphs of his villages in Israel, then down to the gates march the people. So there we have kind of in verse 11, kind of how some of the people are being taught, right? That musicians would go and that these people were going around and there was some teaching going on. And then this whole thing about Merat, I really, you know, if I'm going to do this, you got to come with me, Deborah. You know, not Barak's finest hour, right? We kind of give Barak a hard time. Poetic version just skips that. Doesn't even go there. Okay. So it's good that we have the prose version. We need the poetic brings out, but the prose gives us other information there. So we then come on down, and so, you know, the leader, Barak, led away your captives. And then down the remnant of the noble. So again, that remnant, just what's left over. You get, again, that feeling of oppression that's been going on. And the people of the Lord marched down for me against the Mahdi. And, you know, it kind of, it almost, when I was, when I read that verse, made me think of a David Maxson, you know, sermon that he did. Thank you, dear. That Chester this morning. She's a very good wife. You know, when I read that, I mean, of course, I mean, kind of David Maxson did a good job on the sermon. I guess one reason it comes to mind. But, you know, Jeroboam, when they went out to fight that mighty army, and they were singing on the way to the battle. You know, they were marching the battle. And for some reason, when I read verse 13, that's kind of what came into my mind, was that sermon of Jeroboam and the people singing to the Lord as they were marching off. So again, kind of very visual. And then from, we kind of have here then this kind of roll call of the tribes. And again, you know, one of the things that we don't like about points is they use these names and words that are ancient history that just aren't the common. So probably there was a certain rhyme or there was a certain reason that Deborah did this. But Makar, I mean, you know, that was a question. Look up what the word Makar means. Who is Makar? And so then we go to all the way back to Genesis 50. So Deborah expected these people. Yet another foul, another point, or nail in my coffin of concern about the people not being taught is Deborah expected the people to know who Makar was. And you got to go all the way back to Genesis 50. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children of the third generation, the children also of Makar, the son of Manasseh. So I could have said Manasseh, and he said, nailed it. Deborah, she's a teacher. She feels that, you know, kind of that she's teaching these people. Okay, people, you remember, right? You know, it does say Manasseh, it says Makar. Make sure that they got to go back and look at Genesis 50, just like we have to see that. So, okay. So we have a roll call, right? So she goes through the roll call. Naphtali, Zebulun, Issachar, Manasseh, Ephraim, Benjamin. You know, Judah and Simeon are not mentioned, are they? But, and that kind of is part of, kind of gives us that feel for judges, right? And kind of when we talk about that, it is a certain regionalism. And I got the map coming up when we finally get to get in, hopefully today. where we kind of divide the Jordan east and west, and then we have kind of Judah separated. So, you know, when we had that divided kingdom, that division already sort of existed. And we see that kind of lay out to us in Judges. But Reuben doesn't come, Gad doesn't come, but what it says rather than Gad, this region kind of came to be known as Gilead here. So Gilead, Gad didn't come, Dan, Asher didn't come. So she hits all the tribes, right? Says who comes, who didn't come. And, you know, everything realized again is it's up here in Hazar. This is where everything is kind of occurring up in that northern part. And Benjamin comes up, but Deborah's kind of from Ephraim, so it's kind of the neighbor. So the Benjaminites should have really known Deborah, so they come. And so then, you know, we look again at the prose, all it tells us is the Lord routed Sisera. That's all it says. We're not really told what happened, are we? But we come there in verses 21 through 22, and in the song, Deborah gives us more detail. Huh?
So like a redemption.
Yeah. Okay? So from the heaven, the stars fought. From their courses, they fought against Sisera. The torrent Kishon swept them away. The ancient torrent, the torrent Kishon. March on, my soul, with might. The loud beat of the horse's hoofs with a galloping and galloping of the steeds. So, you know, here comes Sisera with almost 900 armed chariots. I mean, we're talking top of the line, modern tanks coming up against a bunch of guys who can't even pull together some spears and shields. So, A, takes a little bit of faith, right, to be standing there. Because, you know, Deborah says, okay, Barak, get all the people up on Mount Tabor. And then you come down from Mount Tabor. You come off the mountain where chariots have a hard time. And you come right where those 900 chariots can gallop, and you're hearing those horses coming. And then God sends a flood along that Kishon River, wipes out those 900 chariots. Worthless. All right. So, the lights there a little bit there. Okay, so Kishon River, a little calm, right? A little hard to get a chariot over, but that's not the kind that's just going to wipe you out. But here's the Jezreel Valley, and the Kishon River just kind of sinks along there, and then again, you have some parts where it's a little bit mushy. So again, this torrent kind of coming through, so Sisera is all ready to go chariot stomping. And this flood comes down, this little kind of, we would call it a creek at this. Okay. So, then she throws it again. We don't know exactly. She says, curse Nerzero, says the angel of the Lord, curse its inhabitants thoroughly, because they did not come to the help of the Lord, to help the Lord against the mighty. And so we don't know the exact location, but kind of the way she says it, it's almost like the people of Mizraim, they're just like right around where this fighting is going on. And so they're seeing the battle, they're hearing the battle, but they don't come out. They're just sitting here on the sidelines, looking to see what happens. Okay? And then we had the death of Sisera there, and these things. So that's kind of not as much new information there. And then just talking about Sisera's mother, talks about her at the window. That's kind of a very, that whole area is almost kind of like a phrase that's used fairly frequently. You think of, and what they'll actually even do is like if they're doing up an ivory piece or whatever, or a woman or whatever, they'll show her in that window. So that's actually fairly common. So, kind of going through in that parallel, we took more time than we really had, but you can see it was pretty important, right? That it gives us a lot better feel for really this whole set of events. And again, it's the one really good example on Judges where we have thanks being given to the Lord. So, any other kind of thoughts or comments before we move on? All right. Are you glad we did the exercise?
Yeah.
All right.
Once a five.
We made it to once a five, and it's still a class. Okay. So here's our timeline. Realize that all of this in green is a blow up of that little period of judges there. Kind of again, we're sort of booked in by Joshua, the conquest. Awesome leader, Joshua. People following, serving the Lord. But he says, people, I don't think you're going to be able to do it. And I said, oh yeah, we'll be able to do it. And on the other, we're kind of booked in with Samuel and the people saying, we want a king. We want to be like all the nations round about us. So we're kind of in that time period. And so what is a phrase that sort of describes this time period?
Everybody did right
in their own way. That's right, because there was no king. And, or they didn't think there was a king. There was a king though, right?
Yes.
There was a king, but they didn't think there was a king. Okay. I added in Ruth. This is, pretty good indication. Ruth was written probably by Samuel and would have been, David kind of being around. But if you go back a few years, sometime in this time period, really, of where Gideon is where all the events of Ruth are occurring. I kind of really wanted to do that calculation because Isban, I believe, is from Bethlehem. I don't remember my notes right. So I was saying, hey, okay, where does Ruth fall into that? But it appears that she would have been before him based on our best calculations. And then anyway, I threw in, there's this guy who traveled up from Egypt trying to get cedar, and he kind of tells us, so kind of an important link of Egypt telling us what life was like there. Okay, three parts to the book of Judges, right? So we have the conditions in Israel. Marty had to cover that in one lesson. Y'all survived. Y'all did. It was hard to do three chapters like that. The judges, which is what we're in now, and then this cultural decline. So we're Gideon, so we're about the halfway mark on our judges, which means I probably should start giving y'all little kind of quizzes before class. You really want me to, though. So, but we got enough of the judges, so we should start doing that. Okay, but we can do this. So here we've divided the land up. West of Jordan, east of Jordan, Judah south. If you were in my middle school class, you'd be having to come up here and put in the tribes, but we don't have time for that. You're not in middle school and not as capable as those young folks are. So, who's our first judge that we have? Abinadel. And of those three regions, which region is he active in?
Judah.
All right. So, yep, Deber, that's where he's from. So, from down there. All right. Second judge.
Ehud.
All right. And Ehud is active or from around where? Benjamin. Ephraim gets involved because he runs up to Ephraim and says, hey, folks, come. Let's go beat up on Moab, right? You get Jericho. All right, y'all are doing good. See, y'all are ready for this pre-test, or this little pre-class test. All right, because you want to do well on the farm test, right? So we need to do that. All right, so our third judge. All right, Shamgar. All right, we don't know exactly where Shamgar is, but there's a city called Beth-Tanet, and so we kind of say, yeah, let's put Shamgar up there. And Deborah knows who he is, so that puts him in which of our three regions? Naphtali. That's good. That's more important than West Jordan, East Jordan business. I'm just trying to get it to easy to read. But hey, y'all are on the road. All right. And hopefully our fourth judge, right? Kind of. So sometimes we'll be nice and mention both of them. But who's our next judge? Deborah. And then Barak kind of gets thrown in there because he's the one that leads. Because I mean, Deborah is sort of a judge like we think of a judge, and Barak has this job of actually leading. So he's the guy who's sitting there as 900 chariots of iron come racing towards him, galloping towards him. Okay, so we need to throw Barak in there. All right, but that causes problems, right? And so, because Deborah and Barak are from two places, so you got, you can say almost anything, obviously, hey, you're close. So, where either are they from, or where does all of this activity occur?
Yeah,
over there, and they're up against Hazar. So if you say, and this is reason, so what you just can say, west of Jordan, you got it. That's a good one for them, west of Jordan. All right, and our fifth judge, the judge of the day, Gideon. And he is active where? Where? He's from Ophrah there, which is on that Jezreel. So it's kind of that Jezreel battle stuff. And it's Mount Tabor. So you think Mount Tabor, and you're really that whole Jezreel valley. So, and again, you're safe west of Jordan. West of Jordan, yeah. So, okay. So our objectives, get the tribe and family of Gideon down. The three occasions when Gideon needed a sign of faith. We're not going to make that today. No, we might though. The three tasks, state Gideon's new name, how he got it, and then list the two ways in which Gideon pinned his army. So those are kind of where we're at on things, and we'll seek to get as far as we can. So, our lesson, so you go to lesson number one. You've got our table there in lesson one, and it's time to fill out Gideon there. So, what location tribe do you have for Gideon? Yep, Forces. So that pretty well nails that. Force of Manasseh. And so, you know, I was thinking Manasseh on the east side, so sorry there, Ken. That was what was throwing me. I was looking at the wrong Manasseh, because Manasseh's on both sides. So that was good to say either way there. So for Manasseh, smallest of the tribes, so we have that. What was the enemy he was up against? And people of the east. So that, and after everything settles, how many years of rest? 40. Yeah. And we'll see if we're on my state of mind. How would you know, or what about Gideon is something you say, okay, and you know, one little quick statement of a few words tells you about Gideon. Ask for a sign would be, because I mean, we have more sign dealing with Gideon the judge than any of them. So, and that would be a good one. 300, right. So, and I went with the 300 because when y'all teach the little kids, is it the three signs or the 300 that you drive home to? Who teaches the little kids? Huh?
You
can
do both.
You do both? Two lessons. Okay. So, I will add to my little chart, add signs. Y'all have made a good case there, and I almost put the slash signs there. Okay, so the Midianites, the Amalekites, so there we have, and then you can add a slash there, plus signs. So we're working through our list, aren't we? Okay. So, Gideon is one of our major judges, right? And we basically say a major judge because there's simply more written about it, that we're told more about. That's the only thing there. And it's interesting, I was reading, you know, because we think, Shamgar, I mean, 600 Philistines with an ox goad or quad, as we would say in our more modern English. You know, that's pretty amazing, but you just have the one verse, and then you get Deborah thrown in. So, in one sense, you'd say, well, had to be a pretty minor person, right? On the other hand, he was important enough that they said, we can't skip Shamgar. You got to at least put his name. So one guy I was reading said, hey, listen, in one way, I mean, we don't have, as far as the building of, I guess, the faith, the major judges helps really build our faith. But Shamgar is a significant individual because, again, when they were compiling judges, they couldn't say, we cannot skip, we can't just not mention Shamgar. So it's an interesting argument of why, actually, even though he only has one verse, he had to be pretty important as a judge. All right, as we said, kind of the author of Judges follows a very kind of formalistic approach, which kind of is very helpful to us, right? Because your books, Judges is a pretty good book for teaching things, for teaching us about obeying God, about the stakes of not, the importance of this deliverer. And one of the ways it does that is the fact that there's a sort of repetition there. Now, what's kind of interesting is that with Barak, this, the Lord raised up a deliverer, and the Lord gave them into the hands of the deliverer, that those words are not there for Barak or Gideon. But they're there, right? I mean, you can think, and I mean, when we're introduced to Gideon, that this whole kind of discussion between him and the angels says, the Lord, you know, you're going to deliver the people. So even though it doesn't use this formula, and really kind of part of where this kind of comes, I got lesson 12 done. I didn't get lesson 13, and I didn't want to rush through lesson 13. So I kind of, Wednesday, we'll shoot for again, having everything to you. But in kind of doing that, and kind of looking at those events and stuff, and it's really kind of, you know, it's at the end of the book, but kind of indications are that the events occur at the beginning. So you then kind of ask yourself, well, you know, why did the compiler of Judges do that? Because again, he's just this powerful point of these cycles and the people kind of messing up, corruption, and not obeying God. And again, this formula is part of doing that. Oh, there it is. So there, again, we have kind of our slides. And so, because it's at the end of the book, you think of both of those events as being just sort of continuing on down, don't you? I mean, especially with the Gibeonites, you think of, man, that's, you know, that's got to be at sort of the end of the days of the judges. But when we get there, you say, well, actually, it's got to be earlier. So, in, you know, when they're writing this chronology thing, isn't the absolute most important thing. But what happens is by Samuel, I think, wrote it, kind of going down here, as you get to these events here, it's just that line trend kind of continues to follow. So as we're going through and studying that, we just keep cycling down. Okay. So, there's our cycle. Sin, servitude, supplication, salvation. And then you get some rest. But and there's other words we could use there, but having four S's help, right? If I say, okay, give me four, and if you can remember, okay, they all start with S, then you can run through that, which will be good, because those are the sort of things that come up on all time. All right, so we're introduced, and what happens? What do the people always do? They sin. Do what is evil in the sight of the Lord. Yeah, come on. I know you're about on time today, so I can't complain.
Sorry, just read.
Okay. So, you know, people, they do what they always do. Lord sends the oppressor, the Midianites. And then what we have here described, I mean, where are we at? I mean, this was brought pretty low, weren't they? I mean, we have really a very good description, didn't y'all think? I mean, can you think, I mean, it's hard to think of another case where they're brought as low.
I got the impression of the language of the plagues in Egypt because of their cattle and their donkeys and their sheep and everything. And the locusts and like they come in. It seemed like the God of Israel plagued in Egypt on the children of Israel at that time.
And I guess what that's in most of the curses, right? That I'm going to bring. So I did not think of that, but actually that is a very good way to think of this. To think about to those plagues of all that was brought upon the Egyptians. And why was that? It was because Pharaoh, with his hardened heart, his arrogance, to let my people go. And so here, again, this coming down as hard as they did, it was
people got their attention.
Yeah, it's only 7 years.
Yeah.
One of the shorter oppressions, right? So it really, yeah, came down. But what's a sign of just how bad things had gotten? Because what does Gideon end up doing after he sees the sign of all the food and everything he saw, taken up in flames? He's told to destroy a Baal statue, use the wood of Asherah as a sacrifice, and kill these two bulls, right? When does he do it? At night, okay? And he was probably wise to do it at night, because what did the townspeople come and want? To kill it. Okay, this is God's people. God's people coming saying, Gideon, you're a dead man. You have destroyed the idol. You've destroyed our Baal idol. You've done a horrible thing. We got to kill you. You blaspheme against Baal. So we don't really have that kind of attitude given to us beforehand, do we? And these other judges. So, I mean, things have gotten pretty bad. And so it's there. Things have gotten very bad. Brought very low because of Midian. They cry out to help. And then, to me, the deliverance there is in verse 14. And the Lord turned to him and said, go in this might of yours and save Israel from the hand of Midian. Do I not send you? Does that sound like? It sounds like you're a deliverer, but it doesn't use that formula. So it doesn't get in our attention. That particular author's table. Okay, so pretty low, pretty bad. So kind of some of the scripture. One of the things kind of interesting is, I got it there, is that the Assyrians here they like to put stuff up on stone, which is kind of nice because that sort of blast, so you can dig that up. And so when they're picturing the Midianites, there they are on their camels, fighting on camels. So, when we have this whole discussion about the camels of the Midianites and stuff, that's very historically correct that they were associated. So, they would come with their livestock in their tents. They'd come like locusts. Both they and their camels could not be counted. So that they laid waste of land. So they just came in, and it wasn't like, we're going to leave you enough for your village to survive. We're going to lay waste. And so you get the Midianites, you get the Amalekites in there. and sand that is on the seashore in abundance. I mean, again, just this description, again and again, of a large number. And then also we're told here that Gideon's brothers have been killed by it. It's kind of, you don't get that all the way until chapter 8, but that's occurred. And then I'll come back. They've encamped, they divide the produce land as far as Gaza. So they're on the other side, right? That's down. We associate that with the cities of the Philistines. So we're up in the Jezreel Valley. We're up in the north. And so when it says Gaza, it's not only gone to the Jezreel Valley. They've gone right down along the plain and stuff all the way to Gaza. Again, like locusts. And brought very much. So the events here are occurring in the Jezreel Valley, and I'll probably have you some more pictures because I'm still not happy trying to convey to you what we're talking here. But again, this is some of the richest land is in this Jezreel Valley. And so all the events really of Gideon are occurring in this valley. And what it is that it just goes, here's Mount Carmel, we associate Elijah, right? And so it just comes right along that valley and comes there to the Jordan Valley. And so here's actually a pretty good map of kind of just, again, that concept of that greenness. It's a good place for 900 chariots to go roaming around. There's Mount Tabor that we remember from Deborah, right? So that they came down and had to go all this way for Kishon. So pretty rough situation. And we're going to come back to this one because it's kind of all the fighting. So we don't know exactly where Ophrah is, but pretty much the feeling from what's discussed there, it's part of that Jezreel Valley, right? So we're going to have the spring of Herod where we get down to 300. We got the Midianites kind of coming in. So all of this is raging really around this hill of Moron. I had a picture in there. It's in there later. We'll probably get to it on Wednesday. So a prophet. So we get a prophet in there. So again, yet another nail in my coffin. On the saying that the people seem pretty ignorant. Well, they did seem ignorant, but it wasn't because they weren't being taught, which is the worst kind of ignorance. So people cry out, and so here this prophet comes instead of, and he said, "Thus says the Lord to the God of Israel, I led you up from Egypt, I brought you out of the house of bondage. I delivered you from the hands of the Egyptians." So again, that thinking of the plague really fits well with what's kind of happening here. Because what's the prophet doing? The prophet, you know, is bringing them right back. Remember those plagues. It doesn't say the plague.
Look at Gideon's language. It's almost like Moses when God told him to go.
That would be an interesting to kind of do that table of Moses and Gideon. Because it is. Because when you think... It's a very good point there. Well, I'll try to get that. I'll give him that assignment. See, Marty's not here, so you have to give me these extra assignments to kind of lay that. Because again, we think of that interaction there. We think of Moses. So I drove them out, and I gave you their land. So here we got the conquest, and I said to you, I am the Lord your God. You shall not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. Right? We had kind of laid out the whole thing with Joshua says, listen, people. You know, and it even goes back to those beginning part of that chapter, right? Those first three chapters that sort of set the stage for us. And then again, here's the problem. You have not obeyed my voice. So we can't say, you know, again, my dead coffin, that the people just weren't being taught. There's enough evidence that they're being taught. It is, they are deciding not to obey God. They are deciding to do what's right in their own sight. And we live in that kind of day today, now, don't we? It is, there are no absolutes. Well, the folks in the days of Judges would get along pretty well with the mindset of the folks we live with today who say there are no absolutes.
Yeah, now, I'm thinking of this is more like sounded like Romans chapter 1, where it's when Paul was talking about the Gentile world.
Yeah.
How they refuse to have God in their knowledge. This sounds more like that, like it's there, but they are rejecting it. And so it looks like nobody knows anything, but they're refusing. And then replacing what they know of God with these other gods or these idols and everything else. So that's what they're rejecting it and refusing to acknowledge God. So you get the same result, whether it's ignorant
or... And they know God's realm, and they'll go through the basic motions, and they're getting the history. But it's sort of like, well, he's here, and then all of this other stuff fits in too.
So it's interesting, because I like the fact that you open kind of going back to... When you get the Exodus period and all that, you think about the promises that God made to the nation of Israel. You will be as numerous as the stars. You're going into a land flowing with no garlic and onion here. They have no food, and it seems like the enemies are as numerous as the stars. And just the plague, because they have not obeyed the voice of the Lord.
Yeah. Ronnie?
I'm okay.
Are you okay? Because you were the man, and James thought I was pointing to him.
What God said. Is that something he said in the past?
Oh, yeah.
Here. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, go back one of those first three chapters. He preaches that a good bit to them. It's not new.
It makes sense when it's like, but.
Yeah. All right. We will continue. I'll get Gideon. We'll see if I can finish Gideon. If not, at least Sunday, I think I have, no matter what, I will get us caught up on Sunday.
I'm here like